You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Bedenick.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the days of our lives.
It is Friday, the 15th of January, 2016, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from our studios underlooking the atrium of the Palatial Student Nest on the Musqueam territory of Oaksen, better known to you as the Point Grey campus of the University of British Columbia. On the program today, Pacific Theatre is premiering a new play by local actor and playwright Shauna Johannesson. And we sat down with Shauna and director Ron Reed. We'll have that conversation for you in a few minutes. And we'll see who's playing at Shindig next week as the semifinals continue. And then we'll fill you in with what else is going on this weekend. It's Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theatre, film, and music. And it starts right now. Don't touch that dial.
times with your
Yeah, as you know, as we've heard, David Bowie passed away a week ago. And so we thought we'd pay a little tribute. This is from a local band named Sweetheart. And who knew when they wrote this song that it would come in useful today? Now, for you real David Bowie fans out there, you'll recognize this tune as well. This is from probably, for me anyway, one of David Bowie's best movies. It was called The Hunger with Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon. And this is how the movie opened, with Bauhaus and Bela Lugosi's Dead.
I'm dead.
And it goes on and on for another 20 minutes or so, but you get the idea. That's Bauhaus from The Hunger. Favorite David Bowie movie. At Pacific Theater right now, well, starting next week, actually, a brand new play by local playwright Sean O'Johannesson. And it's directed by Ron Reed. And those two were very gracious in inviting me onto their set yesterday for a conversation about the play itself and also about the playwriting process. This script came out of a play development program that goes on at Pacific Theater. And so we sort of kicked off the conversation about that. So this is my conversation with the folks behind Common Grace at Pacific Theater. Or actually, no, that's more Bauhaus. Let's start again.
I'm Ron Reed. Mm-hmm. I'm artistic director at the theater, and I'm the director of this play.
Right.
And the artistic director part comes into this because it meant that I was able a couple years ago to approach Shauna and say, you're a playwright, would you write one for us?
Yeah, and I'm Shauna Johannesson, and I'm the playwright, and I'm also playing the lead character in this play.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is exciting that we're actually going to talk to the playwright too, because that doesn't happen very often around here.
But it is really nice, though. It's because there's not that many new plays that get done here in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and so it's a real opportunity.
Let's start by talking about the process of the playwriting process, because this came out of a program that was established here at Pacific Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with that.
Yeah, we realized. Like, we're 32 years as a company. In our early days, we wrote a lot of our own material. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed that more and more, we still were developing plays, but I wasn't ending up staging them. And there was just so many more plays that had accumulated over the years that I wanted to put on our stage. And also, it became clear that, you know, here's a play by Stephen Adley Gergis, here's a play by John Patrick Shanley, here's a little bit of Shakespeare. Oh, and here's our new play that we spent a little bit of time on, and it's sort of like, oh boy, the bar had become kind of high.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this isn't our company if we're not developing new work. Because it's been part
That's
of our...
me. Just keep talking.
The old phone thing.
Yeah.
It's not our company if we're not developing new work. Because we do have our mandate and our work that's distinctive, and it's important to be creating not just interpretations of plays, but the plays themselves.
Yeah.
And we've done so much of it, and then I noticed that it had been a while. So I realized that we had some playwrights around and thought, why don't we really be intentional about this? Like, every second week we will meet and read somebody's play. And I talked to about half a dozen folks who were around who were writers, Shauna being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in some case, they were Pacific Theater folks who had written a little bit. In some case, they were playwrights who had written a lot, and I wanted to draw them to the Pacific Theater table. And, you know, you have a lot of these ideas about that would be a great thing mm-hmm. to try, and they don't always work that well. This one just worked completely well.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting, too, because on the one hand, a play... On the one hand, it's not that much effort in a way, because on the one hand, you're just bringing a group of people together at a table a couple times a month or whatever, and that's not actually that much work. It's not actually that much money. It's not actually that, you know, that's actually a very doable thing. And on the other hand, a play is actually a big investment.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I mean, this play has been 2.5 years in the making, so, you know, it's not necessarily just easy for new work to come about. You know, we wrote draft after draft, and being able to have a place and a home, a place at the table to come. And, you know, part of it is a deadline thing. You have somebody who's actually waiting to hear your next draft. You're not working alone in a room somewhere. And also you get feedback, so you're moving forward, you know, and really it needs that, you mm-hmm. know, like you're growing a thing and it takes that long.
Some plays just do kind of burst forth. I've written a couple plays and you write that first draft, and then it's like, okay, so you tweak it, you touch it up, and it's there, and then most plays aren't that well behaved,
mm-hmm.
and they take a lot more tearing up, starting over, reworking a thing. What's been terrific about this is when we began, there were two or three voices at the table that really had a strong dramaturgical sense, who knew how play structure worked, what are some ways you can get rid of writer's block, whatever, just, you know, nuts and bolts of playwriting.
Yeah.
And then a number of people at the table were gifted writers, but hadn't developed those chops, hadn't read those books or done that stuff. And it was wonderful because there were a few voices at the table who were pretty far along in having worked on other shows, and or everybody worked on shows as actors and directors and things. But dramaturgically, what's the machinery of a play? How does it work? How does story get told? And so we had, and Shauna was one of those people that already had a pretty good sense of how plays work. Mm-hmm. Not always easy to apply it to your own play as you're writing it. But the point is that as we brought in play after play and had the conversations, it was a four-hour session every week. And you're reading a play and it's going to be up to 2 hours. That leaves at least as much time to talk about it. And the learning we were all doing from one another about how do plays work and what I can see in somebody else's play, I don't see in mine. But then the penny drops. You kind of go, well, that's why... reversals matter in a scene, because when Jana did that, it came alive. That's what they mean about mine. Okay, now I get it.
And you're also seeing plays progress. You're watching a new version come in and go, that did work when they when they adjusted that character to have more of an action, more of a through line. The whole now I see where that place is going. So all of that. And I'm also the Playwrights Guild rep for BC Mainland and Interior, and I know that how unusual this is. That playwrights get to have this.
To have a community to work with.
A community of people and some support to help move work along, because, yes, my play benefited. I benefited as a playwright. I became a better playwright by getting to sit and listen to these plays week after week and hearing that dramaturgical voice and you know, so that...
Yeah, and there are a few other areas that where that kind of thing happens.
Oh, yeah.
For example, I'm part of a group called the Cold Reading Series.
Yes.
And that's an element for writers as well.
Yeah.
And
this play actually had a reading there.
Very possibly.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about.
The Playwrights Theater Center is always developing work.
And just that experience of having your words being read out loud brings a whole new element to the work, and you discover things in that process
Bringing writers and actors together, or bringing writers together with each other, because it can be a very lonely, solitary thing.
Right.
And you need to be reminded that
Well, and I can't go further. I reach a point where I've written what I can write. I can't go further until I hear it. And it becomes very true that a play script is a score for performance.
Yeah.
It's not the piece of music.
Yeah.
So you gotta give it to a band and
you gotta hear
it. Oh, that's how that diminished seventh, that's the right chord there, but I'm not sure if it really leads to that. And so I write as far as I can, and then I have to get at a table with actors to read it, and then I can go away and write again.
Yeah.
So there's a tide comes in, tide goes out. There's a rhythm to that. For me, it's essential. Now and then you write a play, and it just happens.
Yeah.
But it's not very often. And I don't write enough of them anymore to come up with that every fourth play more than once every couple of decades. It's terrible.
But you also in this kind of process learn to trust your own voice differently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, because you bring it to the table and you get all of this feedback. And you have to learn where you say, yeah, that's really valuable, I'm going to try that, and no, that's not this play. Or that's someone else's version of how this should go, but I don't.
And I think we've got a good tone. We call that group working with. The idea being, nobody coming into the group was promised, you'll get a production.
Right.
And so Pacific Theater wasn't promising a production, nor was that playwright saying, this play is now the property of Pacific Theater.
Mm-hmm.
But every playwright in the group can say, you know, someone says at a party, what are you up to? They say, well, I'm working with Pacific Theater on. And we can say, we're working with Shauna on a play. It's not saying we're producing it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, curiously, or wonderfully, we did a script-in-hand staging as part of our main stage series last year of one of the plays. This year, there's a script-in-hand staging as well as this full production. Next year, we're going to have a full production and probably a staging. So the fruit of it's been terrific. But all that to say, this business of coming together every couple weeks and having the rotation with the number of playwrights we had, it was sort of every 2 or 3 months you'd bring in your piece. And so there's enough time to mull it a little and then write, but it's soon enough that the pressure's not on, but the rhythm stays up. You don't wait a long time until somebody gives you a workshop on your piece. The tricky bit still can be, when do I listen to the voices around the table? Because everybody's saying that subplot about that guy's girlfriend is not shouldn't be in your play. When do you finally give into that? But when do you also go, I know you guys don't think that works, but I know it will.
Yeah.
And that's tricky. And when there's many voices around the table, it's tricky. But I think we've had a great, we've struck a great balance of not critiquing each other's plays. You never go in there defending your play.
Yeah.
It's more like you hear it and then you ask for what you need from people. And
that's, I think though that Ron, that's something that you've done specifically too, is just to cultivate that environment around the table. From the very beginning, that was kind of the understanding that this is not a place where we're bringing anything to tear each other down and to tear things apart or to show how much more clever or whatever you are than the playwright that's wrote the play. But it was too, and so I think there is also that, you know, at the beginning, after we read the play, one of the first questions is, what do you want to hear?
Right.
You know, like, do you just want to hear your play? Do you not want feedback today? Is it just to hear it out loud? Do you have questions? You only want things in the form of a question?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want people's opinions, but if they have questions about stuff. And but then through that too, there's a natural kind of trust that happens, so that almost doesn't have to be said after a while. There's an understanding, you know, professionally and as friends and colleagues, you know, that we do respect one another. Mm-hmm. We all understand also how difficult it is to put your work in front of someone else, especially when you know it's not stage ready yet.
It's not
ready.
You
know there are things that are bad.
It's still a mess. I know this part's boring, but I have to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about the piece itself now. It's called Common Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from?
Where does any play come from?
Yeah.
Somewhere deep inside of you.
Yeah.
And hearing things. I mean, so when I sat down with Ron a couple of years ago, we had talked and he said, why don't you come to working with? Why don't you write a play? You know, we had talked about some issues of faith and doubt. That was part of it. I'm very interested in faith and doubt and the idea of how you know something, how you believe something or not. And Ron had said, you know, if you come to working with, if you have a play that you think might work on the Pacific Theater stage, that might be the play to write, but write what's in your heart. You don't have to write a Pacific Theater show.
Right.
But these were the questions that I was sort of having. And at that same time, I had heard a story about an affair. And it was a really interesting story, and it was... a lot of the plays that I write come from somebody tells me something, and I'm just so surprised, either by the behavior or by what happened. It seems so unreal. And I wonder where that comes from, because I'm really interested. Almost every play I write also is about identity, kind of, in some way. How do you know yourself? How do you know who you are? How do you decide what that is? And so for me, infidelity is one of those things that, because listen, and every character in the play kind of has this, but I'm very intrigued in my own personal life, and therefore I'm working this out too, about things that I have done or things that I have believed or thought, that if you'd asked me 2 minutes ago, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have said no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, especially with infidelity.
Yeah, you find yourself in a place that you never expected you would be at.
Because I think if you asked anyone, would you have an affair?
Yeah.
Would you be, you know, like most people, I don't know, maybe that's not true, but a lot of people would say, no, that's not something I'm comfortable with. That's not something people don't go into marriage assuming they're going to be unfaithful. And yet it's everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And when you write a play like this, you also hear everyone's stories. Everyone comes and tells you, and it's everywhere. So how does that happen? And also, I wasn't even so interested in like, how does an affair happen? Because they do. I wanted to know what happens to people once that's done. Now, how do you look at yourself and think of yourself? Because you, 2 months ago, 10 years ago, did not think this would be the person that you are, and now you are. And I just remember, for me, I was working at a job, and something happened in a job where a manager asked me to do something that was totally, like, wrong. Totally wrong. And I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. And I remember, and then it all came to light, and I was going, well, I know that's wrong. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be the person who does that. And yet in that moment, at my job, you know, with the manager asking me to do this thing, I did it. And so that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
The person that I thought I was, and if you would ask, I thought if I would come into a situation like that, I would behave differently.
Yeah.
And then I didn't.
Yeah.
So that's what fascinated me, you know? Like, this is what we surprise ourselves, I think, a lot. And that, as an adult, is really intriguing to me. And that, I think, comes with the ideas of faith and doubt and identity, like all of these things of how do you know anything? Because you thought you knew yourself and then you didn't.
Yeah.
And if you don't know yourself, well then.
I think it's important in this play too that the questions of faith and identity are, you've placed them both in community.
Yeah.
It's a community that you know, this Dutch kind of world.
Christian Reformed.
Very community oriented. People know each other. People share so much history, culture, identity. Yeah. And you know that community well. And so these things are played out there. If you're losing your faith and you're just flying solo and whatever, it's like, yeah, it's a profound change. But then who's there to reflect it back to? Who's there to be disappointed in you? Mm-hmm. Who's there to understand your journey? Or who's there to whatever? This woman goes through all the things that Sean has talked about here in the middle of a family and in the middle of a broader community. So she doesn't just have an affair with a stranger she meets on a bus. This is somebody that she went to high school with. And now 15, 20 years later, this thing happens. She knows the wife who she...
Yeah, her family knows. Like, everyone knows each other.
The occasion of the play is the death of this central character's dad. So she comes back from Edmonton, where she's been working professionally. She comes back for the funeral, finds herself back in the middle of this situation where everybody knows everybody's stories, or if they don't, it's big secrets. It's all loaded. Everybody's looking in, both in a bad way, like claustrophobia, and in a really healthy way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
Looking out for each other.
Yeah, for each other.
And those lines are blurry, you know? And I know that, I mean, I come from a big family and I come from a kind of community like this. And there are parts of it that are so beautiful and so lovely. And because you're known in such a, but you're also so, there are a lot of people who are watching and who have comments and who are, and that's, you know, I think a lot about that. I think it's John Locke or whatever, where your rights, you know, my rights end where yours begin or whatever. And that's an interesting idea of how you decide, you know, what's okay behavior in a society, right?
Yeah.
And in a family, though, you know, that's, it's not so easy to say that I'm going to do what I want, because everything that you do does affect everybody in your family, whether you want it to or not.
Yeah.
You know, they, and that I think is, that's the difficult, beautiful, messy part, right?
It also gives your play a great range of characters, of people, because yes, they're cut from a common cloth. Yes, four of the main characters, the most central characters in the play, are related, a mother and three daughters.
Yeah.
But you know about family systems. You know that if this is the good one, this is the bad one, this is the black sheep, and this is the overachiever.
Right.
Well, what happens if the overachiever becomes the black sheep? And you know how you've You maybe outgrow some of those roles as you move away from home and have your own family or your own circle of friends or whatever. You go back home, and what pops up again?
Yeah.
And
everything goes back to the way it was when you were growing up.
You turn into a 9-year-old somehow, and you know it. You can see it happening, and you can't stop it.
Mm-hmm. So the controlling one, who's actually done some work in her life to not be so darn controlling, but you get back in here, you get some crisis and some pain, and that sister who's screwing up again, and you start controlling again.
Yeah.
And so you get this terrific range of these characters who, again, put the central character in the blender. You know, this thing comes at her, and then this thing comes at her, and then this other person brings this agenda and this thing. And so it's pretty great to watch the central character, Colleen, just kind of get knocked around as she tries to sort her way through it with some kind of integrity and whatever, at the same time as she cares about the people.
Yeah.
So it really gives you the maximum chance to have the range and variety of this. We're just working through a section in Act Two right now, where we get this series of shorter scenes. Well, one's a longest scene, but it's a bunch of short scenes combined.
Yeah.
And the mood shifts, the tone shifts, the things that are happening shift so substantially from one to the next. And it's great because it keeps Colleen, the central character, so off balance and brings her to the point where by the end of the play, those deepest things get both revealed and decided. Mm-hmm.
And
pretty moving.
There's something really nice for me too that, you know, there's this part of the struggle of identity is if she comes from this community of faith and in this family and no longer believes the things that they believe, then who is she and how does she fit?
Yeah.
Right. That's one of the things of what do you do if that's the case, right? But there's also something then really nice about when I would read this around the table with people, because it's set in a very particular community, you know, and hearing people who had no experience at all, either with faith or with, you know, a small town would be kind of a similar feel, right?
Yeah.
And they said, no, I still recognize these people. You know, I have, like, that's a family, and that's really nice. I think that you can go very specific to a particular kind of subculture or whatever, and you still can watch this and go, yeah, those are people. That's how people behave, right?
I think the maximum specificity gives the maximum universality.
Yeah, I believe in that very strongly, too, that the closer you can get to the specifics of an event, the more the audience will relate to it. In general.
Yeah. In a world they maybe know nothing of.
Yeah.
But if it's observed with enough particularity.
Yeah, but the dynamics are still there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the roles that different people play and how they respond and how they react.
I mean, that's the thing, too, is we have such a great cast that for me, as a playwright, on the one hand, it's just delightful to see these people inhabit these characters so fully and make them so human. You know, and then as an actor, I get to come out here and experience the play in a totally different way, because now I've, you know, taken off that hat and I'm just living in it with these people, and I have these generous, incredible humans on stage who really are full people. It's a treat. I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
And we work in a small theater here. It's 120 seats, but it's actually two banks of 60 seats each.
Yeah.
So it's like being in a really small theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we've
Everything's very close in.
Very close.
Yeah.
Very intimate.
Yeah.
And so that allows my real value artistically, which is really, really truthful performance.
Yeah.
It allows you to do that without ever feeling you need to play to far distant people, which of course you can do truthfully as well.
Yeah.
But it's that much easier in our little room here, and we've got a naturalistic working kitchen.
Oh, I love the set. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a great
so
looking
happy.
Kitchen. Yeah.
There's running water.
Running water. The fridge is cold. We can put ice cubes in there.
Yeah.
It's the real deal. The coffee
so,
maker
so do you,
works.
So do you use it?
We use it all.
Are you preparing a meal during the play and that
it's
kind
big
of
deal.
Work?
When Shauna first brought it in, she said, "I want it to be in the kitchen. That's where all this good stuff happens."
Yeah.
Yeah. The funeral reception's in the next room, and then the family comes in here, and it's where it happens. So right away I thought, all right, well, if this play comes along far enough, we can do it. I want it in a kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I as an actor, as a director, as an artistic director, I most value that truthfulness in performance. It's not putting on a show.
Yeah.
It's an audience going, oh, it seemed so real. I didn't feel I was watching a play. That was like life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, literally the front rows both sit with their feet on the same floor that the actors are on. So it's very, very intimate room and allows us to maximize that. But when you can combine that with a naturalistic set, the level of real that can be in the room is quite extraordinary. So that's my hope. It's you know, this is not a play with the extremes of what we did, the Seafarer. We've done, you know, shows that are, or the broad romantic strokes of The Rainmaker that we did a year and a half ago. This is particular. These are ordinary lives, just people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just people you know. And Shauna hasn't gone to some lengths to, yeah, but I'll add some drama here. No, this is what happens when this and this. And my belief is that if all the performances are as true as can be, and so I cast actors who seem to me to be very, very true and not putting on a show, and you take a script that aims to be this true and this accurate to how people are, you put it in this room and don't falsify it, I think it has the chance to be so moving for an audience.
And that's, I mean, it took us a long time to kind of hit on the title of the play. We kind of were feeling our way around what it was going to be, you know, and I just couldn't land on it. And then when we hit Common Grace, that just felt so right. And part of it was because I mean, that's why it's in a kitchen. It's very real. It's very common.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be a kitchen sink drama. I wanted it to feel like real people's. I am most interested in the little things, the very human interactions between people, the very small things. And putting it in a kitchen between a family, you get to really see that, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, there's that old saying, kitchens.
There's that that computer thing that fades things out before they're done. Anyway, Common Grace is going to be at Pacific Theater starting on January 29th. So opens 2 weeks from tonight.
I know the 29th is Thursday, or that's preview night. And tickets are available at pacifictheater.org. It runs until the 14th of February. Shows Wednesday to Saturday with matinees on Saturdays. And then there'll be two Sunday matinees in February. As I said, if you want more information, go to pacifictheater.org. And that was the first remote interview that we did with the brand new remote record microphone setup that we've got. And man, that's some pretty good quality recording equipment there. You can just, you can hear me wheezing in the background. It's a bit of bronchitis that day. And just so apologies for that. But, you know, that's live radio pre-recorded. Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with some music. We're going to look and see who's playing at Shindig next week.
Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 6th to 22nd in communities across Canada. La Fondation canadienne pour le dialogue des cultures, in partnership with the National Campus and Community Radio Association, through the Community Radio Fund of Canada and this station, present the RBF series. To help celebrate Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, in 2016, 24 campus and community radio stations from across Canada produce a weekly show highlighting Rendez-vous de la Francophonie events and the importance of bilingualism and Francophone culture and history of Canada. For more information, check out www.ncra.ca/RBF.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ayan.
We're the hosts of UBC Insiders On Air, a show all about UBC campus life and politics. We do interviews and analysis about the UBC community that you won't find anywhere else.
We also talk about what's going on around the rumor mill and judiciously dish out an odd bit of gossip and ridicule here and there.
Join us on CITR Radio Fridays at 7 p.m. or follow the links from ubcinsiders.ca to stream or subscribe to our podcast.
Hope you tune in. Insiders out.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Debbie Crispin presents... Difficult music, harsh electronics, spoken word, cut up / collage, and a general Chris Benn weirdness. Sunday, 7 to 9 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, where we bring you the Community Living Show. A full hour is produced by the disabled community, showcasing for BC self-advocates with lots of interesting and fun content, including some interviews from special guests with special needs. Join hosts Michael, Kelly, and friends every Thursday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. Because you've got a friend in community living and CITR. And I got them too.
There isn't anything. So we're deep in the middle of Shindig semifinals. Shindig, of course, is CITR's annual band competition that's been going on for 30 years and counting. It happens every Tuesday night at Pat's Pub and Brewhouse at 403 East Hastings at Dunleavy. And there's usually three bands each week and lots of local beer, jokes for beer, all kinds of great fun. And after the bands are finished playing, CITR DJs will spin tunes well on into the early hours. It's $6 at the door, 19 plus, of course. And we're into the semifinals. So we had all of our preliminary rounds at in the fall and early winter of 2015. And first round of semifinals happened last week. Congratulations to Psychic Alliance for advancing up to the finals. And the finals, of course, will happen on February 5th, which is a Friday night at the same location. So now we're going to let you hear who's coming up this coming Tuesday night in this following order: Winona Forever, Pale Red, and Walgreen. Here's Winona Forever.
Never been better, I guess that's a lie. Cause your boyfriend is cool and I'm way too high. One last grasp for normalcy, but I guess that's just not me. Cell phone next to
take me into the forest with you. We're going all the way in. We're going all the way. Tell me about your whole life. Don't lie. I'll know you when I see you. We're going all the way.
So that's Walgren, and they will be performing along with Pale Red and Winona Forever Tuesday night at Pat's Pub at Hastings and Dunleavy as night two of the semifinals of CITR Shindig. Other CITR events that are going on that you might want to be aware of, we are having an open house on Monday the 18th. An open house here at CITR, underlooking the atrium of the palatial student nest from noon until 5 o'clock. So if you know anyone that secretly wants to be a broadcaster, get involved in CITR, bring them along. Bring your friends. Tell your friends. Tell everybody. Tell your enemies. Tell your mom and dad. We'll be offering tours all afternoon. You can check out the place, see what's going on Monday at noon. Also, CITR is organizing a Spinal Tap Beer Garden at the Norm Theater in the old Student Union building, a partnership with FilmSoc, and that will be getting underway next Friday, the 22nd, at 7 o'clock. Just like that. Yeah. All right, let's take a look now at the call board and see who's calling out for actors and crews, musicians, other contributors for productions around Metro Vancouver. Have you sent in your audition notice for the Pool Festival? This is Vancouver's annual 10-minute play festival that goes on Gravel Island at Studio 1398, produced by Some Theater and Speakeasy Theater. This year's directors are Melissa Wee, Kayla Dunbar, Kaylin McCarthy, and Kayvon Kelly. Lots of K's going on there this year. And the auditions are on, let's see, the 20th and 21st. So that's Wednesday, I think, Wednesday and Thursday at Carousel Theater on Granville Island. To get involved, you just send your headshot and resume to pullfestival@gmail.com. And they are looking for lots and lots and lots of people. There's seven different 10-minute plays with a whole range of characters and needs. The ensemble has consisted of around 12 to 15 actors. So there's lots of opportunity for you there. So it's pullfestival@gmail.com, and there's a link on the Dave Radio Facebook page if you want more information on that. Opera Mariposa and the Mariposa Theater Wing doing Masterclass by Terrence McNally, and they are still looking for a pianist. So if you are someone that's got the Royal Conservatory grade 9 or greater, and you've got some experience doing collaborative piano work, then they're looking for you. So contact operamariposa@gmail.com. The Leaping Thespians are doing a show in April. It's called Belonging and Beloved, and this is an original production by Karen White, and they are looking for three women of any age. And or more if you're available. So contact Karen at leapingthespians@hotmail.com. Theater Terrific has auditions coming up. We've passed that, so we'll just carry on. Bright Young Theater doing Crimes of the Heart auditions on January 17th on campus here at the BC Binning Studio. Looking for two men, any ethnicity from around the mid-20s to early 30s area, must be comfortable with a Southern accent. Brave New Playwrights, that's another big play festival going on. Involving UBC creative writing students and also actors and directors from all around Vancouver. The auditions are coming up on the 17th and 18th, and that's at the Playwrights Theatre Center, 739 Gore. If you want to be part of that, contact bravenewplaywrights@gmail.com or go to their website, bravenew.ca. Metro Theatre doing Comet Potential by Alan Akeborn. Their auditions are on the 17th and 18th. United Players, our friend Matthew Bissett is directing The Government Inspector, and that's going to be at the Jericho Arts Center on Sunday. Caravan Stage Company is also looking for people for their Nomadic Tempest. Auditions are at the end of January, and if you want more information on that, you go to caravanstage.org. For details on these and other audition notices, go to vancouveractorsguide.com or vancouverpubliclibrary.ca. All right, so we got that. I think we're just about done with our stuff here. We've got a few shows going on stage this weekend. Of course, you know about Heather's the Musical, that we talked about that last week. They had a great opening night on Friday, and they are closing this weekend. So make sure you get out and see that. That's at the York Theater, two shows tomorrow, and they're closing on, I think they have one show left on Sunday. So make sure you go to that one. There's also The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. That's at the Culch at Venables in Victoria, and that is closing next weekend. And then at the Fire Hall Art Center, The Motherfucker with the Hat. This is a play that's stirred up a little bit of controversy over casting issues, but it's a great show, a great group of people involved, definitely worth checking out. And that's at the Fire Hall Art Center. They're opening there this weekend. And at the Rio Theater, some brand new movies that you might want to check out. One is a brand new production of Shakespeare's Macbeth, and that's happening tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at 6:30. And then Tarantino's latest, The Hateful Eight, at 9 o'clock all this weekend, and no midnight show. So go, and then also tomorrow and Sunday at 3:45, Room at the Rio. And speaking of Room, we got time for about one more song, and then it's time to say goodbye. This is Tough Customer. And that's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Our shout-out this week goes to all the students, volunteer programmers, and station staff involved with the UBC 100 Radio Documentary Project. Throughout this year, CRTR celebrates UBC Centennial with a series of documentaries for radio, all about the history of UBC. The first batch are being released this month. You can find them on our brand spanking new website at citr.ca. We got Thunderbird Sports for you this weekend. Women's hockey versus the Alberta Pandas tonight at 7 on the radio. And men's and women's volleyball tomorrow. UBC versus Brandon at 5 and 6:30, streaming live on citr.ca. Remember, if you have a song that needs airplay, a show that needs audience, an audition that needs actors, a class that needs students, or a film shoot that needs background, we are here for you. Send your details to us at daveradiopodcast@hotmail.com and please like us on Facebook. And if you missed any or all of today's show or want to relive glorious moments from your past, check out our podcast archives at citr.ca. Stick around. Eleanor and Erica are right here with Femme Concept. And be sure to listen to 3:30 today for the return of Notkin Boy on Nardwar, the Human Serviette presents. Davey Radio returns next week at this same time. Bye-bye.
Station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
home.